has a Jewish understanding about God's creation of the universe. It's unlike the way many of us think about the creation. This ancient understanding that says when God created the universe, God didn't start from scratch. Well, a lot of us think that the way the Bible talks about the beginning is that God started with nothing and came up with something. Creatio ex nihilo, it's called. Creation out of nothing. Take a close look sometime in the first chapter of Genesis, and you'll see it doesn't say that. In the beginning, it goes, in the beginning when God created the heavens and the earth was formless, a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters, it says. The earth was a formless void. Darkness covered the face of the deep, a kind of primordial soupy mass of undifferentiated stuff, you could say. God separated the light from the darkness, we read, and God separated the waters under the dome from the waters above the dome. The biblical understanding of the way God created all things was to separate some stuff from other stuff, and to bring order out of chaos. To reach out and create a place within the waters of that primordial soupy mass, holding down the waters of the deep, holding up the waters of heaven, making a safe place, an orderly space where life could begin and thrive. It's this understanding that's reflected in our reading, that first reading we heard this morning. It's the last portion of the story of the Great Flood. That great story of the devastating destruction that God causes because, as the story says, the earth was corrupt and full of violence. And so God, in the story, decides to destroy it all, to give up on the grand experiment of creation and to let go of the barriers that hold back chaos, to release the waters of that great mass of stuff being held back since the world began. Cry havoc. Let chaos come. Cleansing and purifying and destroying everything in its path. And that is just what happens, with the exception of one thing. God spares a few representative creatures, including the human being Noah and his family. And when it's all over, God makes a covenant. God makes a covenant with Noah, an agreement with the entire human race ever since. And according to the terms of the story, Noah and his wife effectively become the parents of all human beings that follow. God agrees never to again unleash the chaos, never again to make war on creation. And as a sign of that covenant, God hangs his war bow up in the sky, a reminder that God would never unleash such violence upon the chaos, or upon the cosmos. The rabbis have an ancient commentary on scriptures, which some of you know is called Midrash. Rabbi Arthur Waskow of the Shalom Center has written a Midrash on the flood that I think is worth considering as we move into this season of Lent. The rabbi notes that the way the scriptures tell the story of the flood has numerous and very specific references to dates and to the seasons of the year, telling precisely when the flood began and when the flood ended, along with some other dates in the midst of all. For me, the rabbi writes, this, plus the rainbow covenant, which is about cycles of time, seed and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night, is a strong hint of what went wrong before the flood. What went wrong before the flood was that human beings had screwed up the temporal order, had screwed up the cycles and rhythms of time and season. They had messed with it all. The flood came, at least in part, because of the destruction of these natural cycles, he writes. For me, this is a powerful warning from Torah. For the human race has, in the past few generations, done much in our modern day to shatter seasons and their celebrations in ways that I think endanger the planet we live on. This comment reminded me about Easter Island. I think I've spoken to you about Easter Island before. It's a tiny island in the South Pacific where there are these huge sculptures which line the coast of the island. When the first Europeans arrived there in 1722, they reported that there was not a single tree on the entire island. There were no trees because the people of the island had cut them down centuries before in order to move the sculptures they had created from the quarry to their position by the sea. And so they cut down the trees to roll them along the path to the sea. With all the trees gone, coral erosion followed, and all the crops were washed away. And without the crops, a gruesome period of tribal war began and was followed even by cannibalism. Now, I think it's important to note, Easter Island isn't very big. It's small enough to know that someone would have seen the last tree. They would have seen the last tree. And whoever cut it down had to have known they were cutting down the last tree. And they would have known that without trees, their fishing boats couldn't get repaired or replaced. But they cut it down anyway. Easter Island is a cautionary tale of just how short-sighted we human beings can be. So this morning, I'd like to, as we begin our Lenten journey, let me offer you an observation and then a suggestion. First, the observation. God may have promised not to bring chaos upon us or upon the earth ever again. But you know what? We didn't make that promise. We human beings have made no such promise. And it seems that every year, our lack of making a promise, our lack of care and concern for the planet on which we live, becomes more and more evident. Like a modern-day flood, the story of Easter Island stands with plenty of other actions as vivid reminders of just how fragile our world really is and just how easy it is for chaos to descend upon us. Only now, it is our own chaos, our chaos of our own devising. Our fate and our future are intricately tied to the fate of our planet, the planet on which we are wreaking havoc. So the suggestion. If you haven't decided upon some sort of Lenten discipline, let me suggest that you consider making your discipline one that is concerned about the health of this planet. We're not talking about spending 40 days of Lent adopting a highway or something. I'm talking about spending some real time in prayer and reflection upon what we can do with the rest of our lives to better care for this world. I'm talking about spending time and prayer and meditation on how, from here on out, our lives can be lived in a way that is just as active in healing the world as we have been in destroying the planet up until now. And then, let that reflection guide you in a way of determining ways in which you can heal the planet. Ways in which you can give it the care that it desperately needs. Because that, when it really comes down to it, is what Lent is all about. It's not just 40 days. It's about life change. It's about transformation. Lent's about new patterns and new behaviors. I pray it will bring such transformations to us all and to the world we live in. Amen.